welcome to Make Better Photos and Videos podcast. I think I'm still Ross.
And I almost certainly am still Gordon.
Excellent, Gordon. We have a question sent to us for this episode by our listener Peter, who is based in South Australia.
Oh, excellent. It's so good to hear from our friends in the Southern Hemisphere. And what does Peter want to know?
His question specifically relates to the relationship between f-stop number and the size of the front element of a lens. He wants to know if, for example, f2.8 is always 2.8 regardless of the size of the front element of the lens in question, presuming, of course, that the lens supports an aperture of f2.8.
Well, of course. Well, but practice says that it is. But I can certainly understand the question. For those of us who have looked down the barrel of a lens, when it's stopped down, the opening size can look to be different on different lenses. It's not always a lot, but it's certainly there.
Precisely so. And while in practical terms, f2.8 is always f2.8 from an opening size, there are some deeper considerations involved. At the fundamental level, the size of the front element has nothing to do with the size of the aperture, but it wouldn't hurt to explore why.
Well, yes, and that sounds like a deeper dive. So, let's get in the water. It's warmed up a bit.
Indeed it has. So fundamentally, an aperture is an opening that light passes through on its way to the sensor. A small F number means a larger opening, while a large F number means a smaller opening. We know this. The smaller the opening, the more time is required to pass an amount of light than with a larger opening in order to achieve the same exposure.
Yeah, of course. But why are the numbers the way that they are? The generic we use this number in a general sort of way. But I'm a simplistic person and I like to deal with basics. So I understand that F stands for either fraction or ratio. And a ratio can also be called a fraction, as I just said. So ratio of what to what?
Well, as is said in another one of our odd favorite movies, that, Gordon, is the right question. Aperture numbers in traditional lenses are, as you say, fractions. So if you think of 1 over 4, that is actually a bigger number than 1 over 16. Thus, f4 has a bigger opening than f16. And that's admittedly perhaps a bit simplistic, but it's easy to understand. Consideration of the surface area of a lens, or the area of an aperture on its own, has no relevance. An aperture number is a fraction or ratio that uses the focal length of the lens and the diameter of the lens opening or aperture to determine the F number.
Okay, so how do we determine the f-stop number for any given lens? Or again, what ratios are we actually measuring?
Well, as you know, a ratio is a math equation. We take the effective focal length of the lens and divide it by the diameter of the aperture opening. And this gives us the F number in use for that lens at that time. So let's take an example of a 50 millimeter focal length lens, and we measure the aperture diameter and discover that it's 25 millimeters. 50 divided by 25 is 2, which would result in an F number of F2. But I see a question on your face. What's that?
So what controls the size of the front element that Peter was asking about? I find this confusing because in full frame terms, I hear and see monstrous F4 400 millimeter lenses that need the equivalent of a pickup truck to move it around. And then there is my 300 millimeter or a 600 millimeter equivalent, F4, that fits in a small backpack. So the listener's question is relevant. All that size has to count for something.
Oh, it absolutely counts for something. But it doesn't count towards how apertures are measured or calculated. So if we start in the end in mind, the goal of any lens is to get an image onto the sensor. Lenses produce a circular output, and we call this circular output the image circle. The image circle created by a lens must cover the area of the sensor entirely. Thus, the larger the sensor, the larger the image circle that is required. This then requires larger elements to be able to produce that image circle. Let's use your example of a full frame equivalent 400 millimeter lens. The lens makers have to ensure that the image circle diameter created by that lens at the sensor can never be smaller than 43.27 millimeters. In fact, should be a bit larger for allow for some overlap. However, if that number is accurate, that 43.27 millimeters, we can quickly see that the lens focal length has nothing to do with the size of the required image circle, only that the lens must be built to provide that size of image circle. Now let's move to your Micro Four Thirds camera. That only needs an image circle of diameter 21.6 millimeters minimum, less than half that of full frame. Thus, the construction of the lens does not need to produce as large an image circle, and as a consequence, the lens will be more compact, smaller, lighter. Again, the image circle requirement has nothing to do with either maximum aperture, but has everything to do with how the lens is engineered.
Okay, so why do lenses with a larger maximum aperture have to be so big? I understand that I cannot compare a lens for a Micro Four Thirds with the same lens, same angle of view to the lens in full frame because of the significant difference in image size. But that does not explain the physical size of the front element.
Well, actually it does. The job of the lens is, of course, to gather the light and push it to the sensor. Now, every time we change a full stop, we know that it obeys the inverse square law. So, for example, if we have a lens that must deliver a maximum aperture of f2.8, because that's what the maker wants to sell, that lens has to be built to be able to gather four times as much light as a lens with a maximum aperture of f4. The only way we can do that is with bigger elements and more sophisticated lens design, different multi-coatings inside, and, of course, increased complexity of design, meaning more lenses, more elements, more groups. And this is why general use, high quality 300 millimeter f4 sells for well under $1,000, but going to a 300 millimeter f2.8, one stop more, raises the price to over $5,000.
Jesus.
Gathering more light requires different architecture and gets expensive because the physics of light don't change, even though we might like them to. And that means bigger elements.
All right. So that's fairly straightforward. The size of the aperture controls how much light passes through the lens per unit time. To get a larger aperture, the lens must be designed with that as the required outcome. But aperture, in my opinion, and from everything I've heard you talk about, does something much more important, and that is that it defines the depth of field.
Well, I'm with you 100%. I rarely concern myself personally with what the F number is, but I always think about how much depth of field I will get or choose not to get. As we know, depth of field is impacted by three key elements: the distance from the subject to the camera, the focal length of the lens in use, and, obviously, the aperture. If we lock down those first two criteria, the smaller the opening, smaller the aperture, the more depth of field we get, and vice versa, of course.
Right. So I don't choose an aperture based on the available light. I choose it based on how much depth of field I want for that image with a specific lens and a specific sensor to subject distance. And then I play with the other elements.
Exactly. I do the same thing.
So that tells us that the size of the front element does not impact whatever the F number is being delivered, only in the context of lens designed to gather more light.
Right. It's relatively straightforward to make what we refer to as a standard lens with a large maximum aperture. However, as focal length increases, that complexity of lens design also increases, and we will need larger diameter lens elements to gather that light. However, while a 300mm f2.8 is a large and heavy lens, it actually passes the same amount of light at f2.8 as a 50mm lens does if it's set to f2.8.
Right. If that were not so, certainly exposure calculations would become even more challenging.
Well, indeed they would, and at least these days, we have built-in light meters that can help us with this.
All right, so I am going to go down a rabbit hole here. And, you know, it's all your fault.
Okay.
Based on the presentation you gave a few years back on the subject of lens openings and where you said there were two different kinds of measurements for lens openings.
I did indeed say that, and I'll say it again. I spoke back then, and will today, of f-stops and t-stops.
Okay. You sort of lost me on that one. As a primarily stills photographer, I don't encounter the subject of t-stops. What are they, and do they really matter to me?
As we've already discussed, an f-number, or f-stop, is a mathematical calculation that only takes into account the focal length of the lens and the diameter of the aperture. It's simple, very standardized, and mostly right.
Whoa, Nelly. What does mostly right mean?
Well, the challenge with an f-stop calculation is that it cannot take into account any light loss that happens inside the lens itself. Now, we know that light loss happens in lenses all the time, either due to internal reflections, refractions inside the individual elements, inside the groups, and, of course, there's multi-coding used to try to combat that. But light is always lost inside the lens. Fortunately, the lens makers do a really superb job in addressing this, and so the exposure at a given f-number for different lenses is, for all intents and purposes, identical.
But I have to admit, I never see an issue or even an exposure shift. So do I care?
Truthfully, you don't. Modern cameras tend to make their settings in 1/3 stop increments. That means they're not constantly variable. But given the massive dynamic range in digital sensors, heck, it was near imperceptible to see when we shot film that had only 5 stops of dynamic range.
All right, so I'll bite. If f-stops work, why have t-stops at all?
Now we move to the world of cinematography.
Yes, of course.
Cinematography lenses use t-stops. They don't have click stops for apertures as we are accustomed to. They're constantly variable, and this provides incredible control over what you already said was really important, the depth of field. Moreover, a lens calibrated in t-stops measures the transmission value of the lens, the ability of the lens to transmit light, not the fractional relationship between focal length and aperture diameter.
So that sounds like any lens with an f-stop of 2 passes exactly the same amount of light onto the sensor or the camera film.
Let me make the one small adjustment. Any lens with a t-stop
yes,
of 2. because now we're measuring transmission, we're not measuring the fraction. And that's the whole purpose. It allows the cinematographer to guarantee that if he or she changes lenses for a shot, the exposure will be identical so long as the T numbers are the same. While we may not see it going from still to still in cinema, subtle changes from shot to shot become very visible given that most clips are less than 10 seconds long. We're seeing jump cuts all the time. You can even see it when films are shot using our normal excellent photographic lenses instead of cinema lenses. You'll see a subtle shift in exposure, even though the f-stop used on that traditional still lens was set exactly the same. T-stops eliminate that. Now, of course, it's gotten a whole lot easier when we consider the availability of what we call non-linear digital editing suites, such as DaVinci Resolve. These tools have tools inside them that will automatically do exposure matching between clips in the post-production system.
And do still photographers use T-stop lenses?
A very small percentage do. I have, as part of reviews of cinema lenses from makers who are better known for their still lenses. Some years ago, I had the opportunity to evaluate and review a series of Sigma cinema lenses for a project, and they were quite spectacular, incredibly sharp, great light transmission, massive and heavy, but awesome lenses. But of course, they have no automation. No automatic T-stop or aperture control, no autofocus, everything is manual. So when one chooses as a photographer to use a cinema lens, that's a very specific decision and definitely is going to entail more work on the part of the user.
So what I'm getting from this is that while T-stop lenses are more consistent from lens to lens, regular and, well, even serious photographers are still incredibly well served by our good old-fashioned regular f-stop based lenses.
Absolutely so. Some folks will ask if a lens with a large front element will deliver a better quality image than a lens with a smaller front element at the same aperture as well.
I had not thought of that. And the answer is?
As we know very well, it depends. A well-built lens with excellent elements and groups and superior coatings on those lens elements is going to deliver a great image, regardless of the size of the front element. Now you get a lens that's built with non-optical glass or questionable coatings. Well, you're going to get what you paid for, a not great image. But the photographer gets to decide. However, this is one reason why I recommend not putting cheap filters on the front of expensive lenses. Because what happens is that the worst lens element defines the overall image quality.
Yes, you certainly have said that in the past. So, if I am buying lenses from the maker of my camera or a reputable third party, I will get good images and maybe be happy.
Well, you will. From a technology perspective and an image quality perspective, it's going to be great. The consistency and quality of lens designs has also improved over time. You're going to find smaller and lighter lenses today that pass more light than their past predecessors that also deliver even higher image quality. This is ongoing development in lens design. The more complex the lens in terms of construction, the more variables. So there are more things that could influence image quality. Of course, if you only ever look at JPEGs on your smartphone, this whole part of the conversation becomes moot rather quickly. To appreciate the true quality of any lens, you need to view the final image as a large print at an appropriate viewing distance. Your common 4K computer display is simply too low a resolution to actually see any difference.
Well, you know, this has been a good conversation. and I think it will be useful to our listeners at all levels. So maybe we should wrap up the episode here.
Thanks very much to all of our listeners. To support the channel, please click the Support Us on Patreon button on the website. Or if you're a subscriber, in the email that you receive with the episode link, you have a link to the main page where you can subscribe on Patreon. We want to thank enormously all the folks who have already become Patreon members and supporting this channel. If you shop at BNH Photo Video, please use the link on the main page as it pays us a small commission and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Please submit a comment or send in a question as I read and respond to all. And heck, you may even get an episode out of it. On behalf of the channel, we wish you peace and good health. I'm Ross.
And I'm Gordon.
We'll speak to you again soon.